We continue our learning of Nishmas David ben Menachoshem Chaim Yaakov ben Pinchas Eliyahu. We are in Edios Perek Beis Mishnah Dalid. Shlosha Devarim Amar Rabbi Yishmael Lefnei Chachamim B'Kerem B'Yavne. There are three things Rabbi Yishmael said in front of the Chachamim B'Kerem B'Yavne. Kerem B'Yavne is Yavne was where the Sanhedrin moved after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah Daf Laman Aleph discusses that. And the reason we mention Kerem B'Yavne here, after all of Edios is actually discussed in Yavne, but because the previous Mishnah clearly is not speaking about Yavne, because it spoke about the Mishnais, about Rabbi Chanina's Gan HaKohanim, that was at the time when there was a Beis HaMikdash, so now we move back to mentioning Yavne once again. So three things Rabbi Yishmael said in front of the Chachamim in Kerem Yavne. Number one, Al Beitza Trufa Shehi Nusuna Al Gabe Yarak Shel Truma Shehi Chibur. All right, so let's begin. Beitza Trufa is a beaten egg. You have a beaten egg, it's raw, the egg's not truma, or egg cannot be truma, but it's on top of a yarak, a vegetable that's truma. And what the Mishnah here is telling us regarding the laws of tuma is here you have a raw beaten egg, and it was placed on top of a vegetable of truma, and that vegetable was, let's say, cooking in a pot. It's put on the vegetable so to give it a little bit of flavor. And it says that it's a chibur. Now, why does it mean that it's attached? What does it mean it's attached? So we're speaking about the halacha of a tvul yom. We mentioned a tvul yom in the past. The tvul yom is the one who became tamei. Let's say tamei touched a sheretz, a dead mouse or something, and now he's tamei. He goes to the mikvah, and he's not completely tahor until he waits for harei shemesh, until the sun sets. Before the sun sets, although he's gone to the mikvah already, he has the status of a tvul yom. He's partially tahor, but partially still tamei. And what the Mishnah is telling us, teaching us this, is if Tvul Yom touched the egg, but didn't touch the vegetable that's underneath him, the Mishnah is here to teach you that it's considered a chibur, it's considered connected. Because the egg is a beaten egg, it's a beitza trufa, it sticks to the vegetable, and they're considered one thing. They're like one entity. So if it's Tvul Yom touches the egg, it's like he's touching the vegetable, which is truma. And of course, because the vegetable is truma, by touching it, he makes it tame. He's a Tvul Yom, it's like a sheni l'tuma, make truma commit. He can make truma into a shlishi l'tuma. So yeah, it's true. A tvul yom would do nothing to chulin, but to the egg itself. But because the egg is attached to the yarak and the yarak is truma, even though it didn't touch the vegetable itself, the beaten egg is considered one entity with the vegetable of truma, and he makes the vegetable of truma tame. V'mhoisok min kova ein a chibur. But if that beaten egg was like a hat, like a helmet, which means because of the heat that was in the pot, the egg became hard and it now made like a helmet. Like it's a dome almost over the vegetable. There's some halal that's a hollow space underneath this area, so it's not really connected to the vegetable. So then, if a tvul yom touches the egg, then there's no problem. Then the vegetable does not become tamei. Then that was halacha number one. What else did Rabbi Yishmael say in front of the Chachamim Kerem Yavne? Another halacha. Val shiboles shepa katsir v'rosha magas lakama. You have a stalk in the harvest, and its edge is able to touch other stalks that are standing. We'll see this. We learned this in Seder Zrayim. Im niktzura im hakama harei hishel bal habayis vim lav. If it can be cut with harvested with the standing wheat, it belongs to the owner of the field. And if not, then it belongs to the poor. What are we talking about here? So here I have someone who's harvesting his field, and he left and he forgot to harvest, not for cut out of the ground one stalk of grain. So now where is that stalk? So it's standing alone. It's in the area. It's not that far away from the area where he cut everything. And in fact, some of the standing wheat that he has yet to cut, if he would take this one stalk and bend its top, it's close enough, and when the tip would touch the other standing grain, the other standing wheat that has yet to be cut. So the Mishnah says that miktara im hakama, if you would be able to cut that one stalk with the rest of the standing grain, which means you'd be able to grasp it together with the other stalks that are right next to it and then cut them together. Sounds like you need both criteria. It has to be, number one, that if you bent it, it's able to touch the other standing wheat. and you could also graft them all together and reap them and harvest them, cut them down together. So then it belongs to the Baal HaBayis. This is not considered shechecha. It's not like, oh, you forgot that stalk. I guess you have to leave it there. Shechecha applies not only to sheaves that have been cut, but also applies to kama, to standing wheat as well. You pass by, so maybe you have to leave it there for the poor. The answer is no, not if you can bend the tip to touch that which you haven't harvested yet, and you can grasp it along with the rest of them and reap them all together. So it belongs to Baal HaBayis. Why is that one stalk of grain, why does it belong to the Baal HaBayis when you can cut it with the other standing grain? Because this is, it's considered all part of the same thing. The Isra of Shechecha was as lo sashuv lekachto. You can't go back and take something that you where you finished the harvest. I didn't finish the harvest because I can harvest this stalk, which although I passed by already, I can still harvest it with everything else that's standing. So that's why it belongs to Baal HaBayis. It's in love, but it can't be cut together with the other standing grain, of course, and it doesn't. If you tip it, it's not going to touch the other grain that's standing. Then it belongs to the aniyim, it belongs to the poor. That was halacha number two, that Rabbi Shmuel testified in front of the Chachamim in Kerem B'Yavneh. And number three is Valgina Kitana Shehimu Kefes Aris. This is referring to the halacha of kilayim, of intermingling of different species. And you have a gino, you have a garden, a small garden, that is surrounded by an aris. And aris are vines that are trellised. We discussed this in Maseches Kelayim. An aris is where you have at least five grapevines that are trained onto these trellises. They can be trained onto a fence as well. And here we have a garden that's surrounded by a fence. So the vines that are planted there are planted and trained onto the fence. Here, not a trellis, but here it's the fence itself. So there's a garden here, and there's vines on either side on the fence. So the question is, can you plant some other type of seed here, or is this going to be considered kelayim with the grapes that are there? So the Mishnah explains that you obviously need some space between them. How much space do we need? If there's enough space in the garden for the grape, the person who's the boter, he's the one who harvests the grapes, he's able to stand there with his basket on one side and with his basket on, he's able to stand on the other side, meaning that there's enough space in the garden for the person who comes to harvest the grapes to stand with his basket as he's harvesting the grapes. He's able to do so from either side. There's enough space for him to do so. So then you'll be able to plant some other type of seed, and it's not considered a problem of kelayim. So remember, we're talking about a garden surrounded by a fence. The vines are planted around the perimeter of this fence, and they're trained onto the fence. So here, if there's enough space, and how much space is this? How much space is there for person to come and harvest and stand with his basket, put the harvest down? You have to put the basket down. So he himself, we assume, takes up an area of an amma. Then you need another amma to put the basket on the ground. So that's two amma. So when we say malo boat service salo, we're talking about an area, a place where a person who harvests the grapes is able to stand with his basket. We're talking about two ammas on either side. So that means that the vines are, vines, remember, are around the perimeter. So you have the vines are either side, have on the east and the west and the north and the south. And that means that they are four amos apart. That way you would have two amos on either side. So then tizara, then that garden, that gina can be sown with another seed, as long as that's in addition to what we're speaking about, the two amos, you need also six tfachim, which is not planted at all between the garden and the vines that are either side. That's what we call avodas hakerem. If you take the Bar Tanui, it says tizara, Hagina, vihushe yarchik, in addition to the two amos, she yarchik hazera min agfanim, you have to separate the zera, the new seed, from the vines, kedei avodas hakerem, shem shisho tfach melchol v'ruach, v'zorei hashar, then you can plant the rest. Why is it not a problem of a kelayim? Because you have this. If you have enough space for the person to harvest his grapes with his basket between the vines on either side of this fence, and you're putting seeds in the middle of the garden, they don't look like they're mixed with the vines. So this trellis, what we call the Mishnah calls an aris, is we consider like they're separate vines. And when you have separate vines, you're allowed to plant another seed there, as long as you have what we call the avodah sakarim, six tfachim between that and the vine. So if you have a 2 amma by 2 amma square in the center of the garden, you can plant another seed there, as long as you make sure that there are six tfachim between between the vines and that which the seed that you are planting. Vimlav, but if the garden doesn't have enough space for the botzer v'salo, the harvester and his basket on either side, lo sizara, so then you can't plant it. If you're planting another seed inside a very small area in the garden, so it looks like you're planting kilayim. So even if you separate it by six tfachim, it's not going to help you at all. Perek Beis Mishnah Hey Shlosha Devarim Amru Lifnei Rabbi Yishmael V'lo Amru Hem Lois V'lo Veheter. There are three things that they were said in front of Yishmael, and he did not respond saying it's either Asur or Mutter. Or it wasn't clear, let's say, to him. Upirshan Rabbi Yoshua Ben Masya. And Rishu Ben Masya came to explain them and give us what the halacha was. So what was halacha number one? Is two halachas related to Shabbos, one related to Tumas Beis. Hamefis Mursa B'Shabbos. Mursa's like a pus, a pimple. A person has on his skin. So he squeezes this boil on Shabbos, and now he removes the pus. So are you going to be chayav or not? Is this going to be an issur d'oraisa or not? What's the issur d'oraisa? So this d'oraisa is, we assume that the body, believe it or not, is if you do something to the body that makes a Pesach an opening, that's considered bona, that's considered building. Where do we see that there's building on the body? Vayiv en esat selah. You have this in Parshas Bereishis. So the rib from which Chava was made, that's the language of the Torah, is vayiv en. So the body, if you fix something on the body, that's considered building. So if a person makes a Pesach on the skin, now air is able to go in and out from this pimple, now that you open the skin. So making a Pesach, making an opening, is actually a tolda of bona, of building. So the question is this considered a malacha or not when you now take out the pus? On the one end, so the Mishnah says, im lasos la peh chayef. If the purpose of making an opening is not so much to remove the pus because of pain, but rather because you want to make an opening, so air comes in and out. So if that's the purpose, then you want to make, let's say, additional pus will able to come out. So if an air can come in and out and cause it to heal, so then chayev, that's an issur d'oraisa of bona. He'd be chayev skila b'meiz, and he'd be chayev carbon chatas b'shogeg. But if it's to remove the pus, it's the intent was not to open up, make an opening to do the malach of bona, but rather his purpose was he wants to get rid of the pus. So then it's going to be pater. Now, generally speaking, when we say pater in Hilchos Shabbos, we mean pater v'alaser. It's pater from a carbon chatas, it's pater d'arais, but it's still also d'rabbanan. This happens to be an exception to that rule. This is a case where it's pater u'mutter. This is allowed because of the tsar, the pain that it's causing the person. We say that this is, since you are doing this for the purposes of taking out the pus and not making an opening, so then we can consider this a malacha she'ena tzricha l'gufa. What does that mean, malacha she'ena tzricha l'gufa? You're doing malacha for a different purpose, let's say one definition, than what was done in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, when they built or they made openings, was to use the opening so you could bring something in and out, a person could go in and out. Here, that's not your purpose. It's the tachlit ha-malacha, the purpose of the malacha is to remove the pus and not to make an opening for air to go in and out. So if that's the case, you're doing it for we paskin like Rabbi Shimon against Rabbi Yehuda, then lacha shein etzrucha l'guf is going to be pater, and therefore this would be at worst an issur d'rabbanan. That happens to be, though, because of the pain, we allow this. It's actually mutter. What's halacha number two, for which Rabbi Yishmael did not know, but Rabbi Yoshua ben Masi explained another halacha l'chol Shabbos, also a malacha shein etzrucha l'guf topic, and that is, a person traps a snake on Shabbos. Trapping is one of the 39 melachos. Im is asek shalu yishchenu potter. If the purpose is not to trap the snake to use it, but rather so that it doesn't bite you, then potter. That's going to be considered an iser derabbanon. It's once again a melacha she'en tzricha l'gufa, because the purpose of trapping in the Mishkan, of course, was to trap, let's say, the chilazon, the snail, in order to use in order to procure the treles. And here, though, I'm not trapping the snake to use the snake. I'm trapping the snake to protect myself. So that's a malacha she'ena tzricha l'gufa. It's not done for the purpose, the primary purpose that was done in the Mishkan. And therefore, you're going to be Potter, vim le refua, which is an iser derabbanan in this case. Vim le refua, chayav. But if the purpose of the snake, of trapping the snake, is for refua purposes, not that a person is a pikuach nefesh, but he's planning to use the snake for some type of medicinal purpose, so then that's using the snake, that's trapping the snake to use the snake. That's not trapping the snake to protect yourself. Rashi's definition of a malacha eshen shel gufa is not a malacha done for a different purpose in the Mishkan, but rather you're removing a negative. So that's why, but here I'm not removing a negative when I'm trapping it in order to use the snake. I'm removing a negative when I trap the snake in order to protect myself. So therefore, it's for refuah purposes, chayav yichayav for trapping it. And halacha number three, that was clarified by Rav Yehoshua ben Masya, was va'al lifasin ironios. This is regarding tumas mace. What is this? We're speaking about sealed pots. That's what lefasin ironios are. They're sealed pots. Shehem tahoros ba'ol ha'mace utmeos b'masa hazav. On the one hand, they're considered tahor in a room that has a dead body in it. Well, I'll explain why. But yet, if a zav carries them or moves them, they're going to be tame. So these lefasin ironios are sealed. They're sealed pots, but they're earthenware pots. Remember, earthenware pots, we spoke about klei cheres, that are not metame from the outside. They are metame from the inside and even the airspace. Even if you don't touch them, you could put something tame hanging in the airspace of the inside makes it tame. But touching the outside does not make it tame. So what's unique about these types of pots is that they started out as like a cask, a hollow ball, and they were dried. They were put in the oven, and now they are fired up, and now they're dry. So then they cut them. Then it's cut open, and now you can have two pots from them, or a pot and a cover. So the question is, if it was sealed from the very beginning in this tumma before you cut it open, what's its status now that you cut it open? So the mission here says shehim toros bala mace. They're considered tahor if they are found in a room that where there's a mace, and now you cut them open. We don't assume that the tumma is now inside the kli, because at the very beginning when they were in the room with the tumma, it was closed, and the pasuk says we haven't begun pashas chukas v'chol kli pasua chasha ein sami pasul lav tameu. Only if it's not tightly fastened, but this was completely fastened. It was completely covered. There was nothing inside. There was no inside. And therefore, there's nothing to worry about, since you open them up afterwards outside of the room. The tumma did not penetrate at all when it was closed, before you even made these into kalim, before you opened up this ball, this circle of earthenware, piece of earthenware, which eventually became turned into two pots, or a pot and a cover. But that's only regarding tumas mace. But tumas hazav, it is true, if a zav touches them or moves them, even if it doesn't touch them, we assume that the zav touched the entire thing, and anything on the inside, we assume, is going to be tame. Why is this so? So when the Torah speaks about a zav in Vayikra Perek Tezvav, we speak about a zav touching klei cheres. Now, touching earthenware, zav shouldn't make it tame, because, as we said many times, touching klei cheres on the outside doesn't make it tame. So if he's touching that, what does it mean that a zav touched the earthenware vessel? And he must have touched the inside of the vessel, the inside of the kli, of the earthenware vessel. But it's also not true. I don't need a zav who's very tame to be touching the inside either. As we said, anything hanging in the airspace, even if his finger, if you were tame, puts his hand in the airspace, you have a dead mouse hanging in the airspace of klei cheres, that also makes a tame. So what does it mean that a zav is touching a klei cheres, that it makes a tame? So the conclusion the Gemara has is that it must be that the touching we're speaking about is making it move, what we call tumas Heset. The fact that he is the one who's making it move in if he doesn't touch it directly, but the fact that he is the one that is making it move, that itself is considered like he touched the entire thing, and anything that may have been inside this this ball of Klei Cheres, that before it was opened, before you cut it open, does become Tameh because of the Zah. So what is Rabbi Yeshua ben Maaseh then teaching us? So these pots, which were sealed, they're considered to be kelim that are susceptible to tumah, even though they're closed right now. Even though you have to cut them open in order for it to be a functional kli. The fact that there was no tumas meis is because it's a tzamid pasil. It's fastened, and tumah does not penetrate when it's fastened. But don't tell me that it's not a kli for the purpose of a zav being metameit. Yet Rabbi Elazar ben Sadok Omer says the Mishnah af b'masa hazav tahoros, even having it in this tumas heset, this movement by a zav, also does not make it tameh. This ball of earthenware that you then cut open, even if there's something inside. Because he believes that this is, until you cut it open, it's not considered a kli at all. If it's not a kli, it's not susceptible to tumah. So therefore, there's nothing to worry about, even Azav moving it. Obviously, Rav Shua ben Maaseh disagrees. He says, it's true that we use the kli as a pot, as two pots or a pot in its cover after you open it up. But it's a very simple thing to cut it open, and therefore we consider it a kli as if it's finished even before you do that. No different than if you have, let's say, a jug, and there were a bottle cap, a stopper or something. So we don't say, oh, it's not a kli yet until you open up the bottle cap. You take off the stopper. It's a kli before that. The same thing is true here regarding its susceptibility to tumah, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Maaseh.